Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey, and again, we will try to be riveting. I'm not sure that we ever are, but we'll try. Thank you very much, Audrey. We couldn't do it without you. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network, ladies and gentlemen, and this is the show called Jumbled Justice. I'm your host, Keith Haley. We did it again. Johnny Cash, he's crossing that nation, and I got some things to say about trucks tonight, having one back toward me this week in a parking lot, and then another one shows up in our newspaper where I guess the driver said he almost missed the train. The train only hit the back of his truck, his tractor trailer, as he's going across. Don't get me wrong, it's a really rough job. It's a rough job. If you don't believe it, read Studs Terkel's old oral history book called Working, the first major bestseller oral history book in the nation. Three decades ago, and you'll learn what truck drivers do if you don't know. And it's somebody told me, Mike, if I'm not mistaken, that it has the highest rate of turnover of major occupations in the United States, that they lose more than half of their people each year. And I can understand that. They're on the road. Time is money. And they don't meet the best of drivers on the road either. But we'll have more to say about it tonight. And I'm only harping on this a little bit because tonight our show is about traffic safety. And I think all of us will be interested in that. You've been on the road today, this week, several times or whatever, maybe back from a trip. You've probably got some stories about some clowns out there on the road that you've seen. Well, guess what? Some of those people end up killing others. And it's still something where we have over 30,000 traffic deaths a year, 34,000, and I think they're up this particular year. So we'll see what happens when the new data comes in. Okay, everybody, Audrey, Mike, thank you very much, Emily. Here we go. Purpose of the show is to talk about news and issues and events and sometimes developments in this always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And it's fun, you know, beat cops, you know, they love their job. What more diversity could you see in many categories than being a beat cop? That's why a lot of them don't want to get promoted. It's a fun job. Prison, maybe not as fun. I got one prison news story tonight. You probably heard about the one where they let the guy die in the Tennessee prison. He starved himself to death. The doctor's in trouble there and some other people, but the investigation is ongoing. But this show is dedicated to those energetic and tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and throughout the world. It's a terrible story today. I can't comment on it because I don't know the details, but I heard everybody talking about it where they're two doctors who been over there for like 8 or 10 years in Afghanistan were killed by a security guard who was contracted to protect them, and then a nurse, she's in critical condition, I think. I don't know what her condition is exactly, but just terrible. And, you know, let me say this. I love what they're doing over there. It was a Christian hospital, by the way, started by a Christian organization. I wonder how that can happen over there in Afghanistan. Why are we over there? Why don't we just come home and forget it? There must be complex reasons as to why we are, and I don't want to get into those. You're listening to the Blog Talk Radio Network. Just keep in mind this. It is possible that you or any of the person you know or several of you, any interest group you belong to, all of you belong to some kind of organization, right? A cigar group or, you know, wine tasting. You can have your own radio show, and you can sign up in literally 3 or 4 minutes and be broadcasting worldwide in streaming audio all over the world. Now, isn't that incredible? And guess how much it costs? Nothing. If you're in the prime time area like I do, I think they consider prime, what is it, Audrey, 7 to 10 maybe. Maybe it's only 8 to 10, but anyway, that costs you a little bit. But other than that, you could be a midnight show, a morning show, daytime show, whatever. Don't turn away this opportunity to do that. I'm surprised more of these politicians don't get a Blog Talk Radio show and that type of thing, but some haven't, but some don't. And you'll recognize all kinds of people on there when you look at all the different shows that have big followings and who market their show and advertise, that type of thing. I don't do any of that. You can listen on your computer, and you're doing that probably in your Mac or your Windows. And call-in number, sometimes we take some, 347-996-5983. We take calls, I mean. And tonight we have a long presentation. I normally don't get through any of the presentations when I use audio that's recorded. But this is a very interesting story about one community and what Houston and Galveston. What they're trying to do, and the guy's name is Jeff Kaufman, and he's a transportation coordinator down in that area, safety coordinator, and he's holds little seminars and, coffee hours and things on traffic safety. So they're trying to do something about it. And, you know, you don't have to go too far out in your family to find somebody that's been injured by in a car accident or even to death. And one of my dear, dear friends who passed away of cancer, his wife was killed in a car accident here just about a month ago. And so it's something we're all living with, and we have to pay attention to it. Well, we have a blonde joke tonight, and Audrey's going to let me give the blonde joke. Can I do that, Audrey? Hear it. Let's see what this blonde joke says. A blonde joke for April 24 says, a blonde, a brunette, and redhead are all on a building about to jump off. They all jump at the same time. Which one landed last? The blonde did. And the blonde landed last because she asked for directions. Because she asked for directions? Come on. Okay, she asked for directions. That was funny. And ladies and gentlemen, we're not in Chicago. I hope you're not. So probably have a couple of Chicago listeners, actually. At least we did years back. And if you're in Chicago, they just had a terrible weekend. Last weekend, like 45 were shot. I forget how many murdered. I don't know if those are exact details, but it's just an incredible number, and I think they've had two big weekends in a row, and something's got to be dealt with there, and I've heard people even say we ought to send in the National Guard and clean that place up. I mean, the Chicago cops are probably don't have enough, and they're probably limited there and all kinds of things, and it's got usual Chicago politics involved, so it's probably complicated, but isn't that terrible? Little children being hit by gunfire, and I mean, it it's just terrible. There's no reason for it. But the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms, they don't want you carrying any firearms. They would like for you and the criminals. I think they're talking to the criminals too, right, Audrey? Yes. Here's their message.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, that is a very good idea, Ohio Coalition. We have a green tip for tonight, too. And here's what it is. It comes from Esma Floyd's little book called 1001 Ways to Save the Planet. And the tip is number 899. And it said, give your children, your kids, a garden. Do you ever think about that as the warm weather now breaks through and the plants are rising, the flowers are out, and, you know, why don't you give your child a garden and teach them how to grow veggies or simply plant flowers, and these flowers will attract insects and worms and other wildlife and help save the planet and that kind of thing. What do you think? That's a good tip. I like that one. Well, let's go to some news here before we get into the robust subject of traffic safety. Some good news stories tonight. I've got some long ones that I can't deal with that I might deal with next week, but you've heard the one that they're all talking about. I won't do much commentary, but several elementary school students in Colorado this week were suspended after school officials discovered that they were selling and trading stolen loose-leaf marijuana and edible forms of the drug at school. Like a kid gave one of them a cookie or something with marijuana in it. The others gave them loose-leaf marijuana. Over the past 2 days, they've had two separate incidents at the same school of students bringing marijuana into our school. And, of course, Colorado is what? Open marijuana state. It has regulations, but not enough. And now you've seen the gatherings of people and, you know, tons of people out in the yard, hundreds smoking marijuana and passing it around. And, you know, do we ever explore the reason why people want to be out of their minds with the marijuana? See, I know it has a medical purpose, they say. Others say there's other things that will do exactly the same thing that aren't like marijuana. But marijuana, now I'm hearing even people who've been drug addicts say it was a gateway drug for them. And they beat that down in Colorado, and they passed this law. But this is a fourth-grade student, and he sold it to three different students. One of the students who purchased the marijuana told a teacher the next day. And it says that the kids will not be charged with anything, but they have been suspended. I'm not sure how long it is. The article doesn't say. But it says also that their grandparents will not be charged either. Instead, they're hoping this will serve as a warning to any adult who consumes marijuana. They're saying this is like having a gun in your house. If you have marijuana around your house, it'll be absolutely secure and safe. Yeah, I'm sure that's it'll be safe while you're sitting around smoking it in front of your kids. I wonder if that's against the law, by the way. That probably isn't, because you can drink beer in front of your children and that type of thing. But isn't that incredible? Hey, here's some important research that you've been waiting for. A study found, probably financed by you, that those between 40 and 79 years of age who napped daily for less than an hour were 14% more likely to die over a 13-year period compared to those who did not nap. I can hardly hold my laughter back on this, but longer naps were linked to even higher risk. So people whose daily naps lasted an hour or more were 30% more likely to die. They're saying, though, possibly that the napping itself may not be unhealthy, but rather those who tend to nap also have undiagnosed medical conditions that affect the risk of dying and makes them want to nap more. I always thought naps were good, and we have tons of research going back years that say those who take a nap or twice or something, that they used to talk about the nap after lunch. You worked harder, you were more astute at work in the afternoon if you laid your head down on the desk or in a lawn chair or something like that for a half hour, but now we're saying you're more likely to die. Oh, my. This one I won't comment on much, but they're finding out, this was in the UK Telegraph newspaper, it's not surprising, they said, to learn that various governments, not just the United States, account for the bulk of online mischief. But it's a bit sobering to see the numbers laid out by a new Verizon investigative report that there's been a 300% increase in cyber espionage since last year's report, and government agents are responsible for 87% of it. End of story. It goes on and gives you details about that. But can you believe it? I mean, welcome to, you know, whatever. And the next little cyber story is that I'm not even going to comment on this, but the facial recognition, I think I had a news story about it last week. It's now being used at airports all over the, not all over the world, but in some places in the United States. But you don't even have to get out your ID. You just walk through and look in the thing, and they've got a face print of you that says it's okay for you to go forward into the airport. And they're going to be using this for all kinds of things, credit cards, whatever, and just think of the fraud that is actually going to open up. I think it's just incredible. Okay, here's one on Georgia's new gun law. Everybody's talking about that this week. it's been criticized by one group as guns everywhere. They're calling the bill. But Georgia took a step this past Wednesday toward expanding where licensed gun carriers can take their weapons. And the governor signed a law that allows them in bars without restriction and in some churches, schools, and government buildings under certain circumstances. And some of those circumstances are, following mass shootings in recent years, states have pursued stronger limits on guns, while other states like Georgia have taken the opposite path, with advocates arguing that people should be allowed to carry guns as weapons as a matter of public safety to support themselves. Places where people carry guns seldom get attacked, right? That's what they're saying. The governor there is saying this is the Apple capital of Georgia. He's talking about, and it's, yes, it's a community where we cling to our religion and our guns, Ralston said, drawing big applause in reference to a comment made by President Obama. He's talking about these gun people, nuts, you know, always clinging to their guns and their Bibles. He said religion, he didn't say Bibles, but they're saying the bill makes several changes to the state law. It takes effect on July 1. It says, beside in bars without restrictions, guns could be brought into some government buildings that don't have security, such as metal detectors or security devices. Schools could allow some employees to carry guns. None have decided to do that yet. And, you know, the representative down there, he says, you know, that Jespers, he says this is about the good guys carrying guns, not the bad guys. So we'll have to see how House Bill 60 works. It'll protect law-abiding citizens by expanding the number of places that carry their guns without penalty. And, you know, here where I live in Ohio, you can carry a gun. I haven't looked and see all the places lately, but you can carry a gun in a bar as long as you're not drinking. And, you know, coffee shops and places like that have put up signs, you know, guns are welcome. I think Starbucks used to do that, but somebody told me they changed. Does anybody know about that? I don't know. I'll have to check that, but I heard Starbucks changed their position on that. But anyway, that is really something. Okay, close to our major topic for the night, but here's another news story. It's not just our kids that are getting too much screen time with the electronic devices nowadays. Parents are doing the same. They looked at the study at the Boston Medical Center, looked at 55 groups of parents and young children eating at fast food groups. They found out the majority pulled out their mobile devices right away, and in turn, their kids tended to act up more. They're saying if your kids can't get your attention one way because you're on your mobile phone or iPad or whatever, they'll get your attention maybe in a negative way, and they'll act up. One guy said, we were the couple that would go out to eat at dinner and both would be on our phones before we had kids. And this woman said, we stopped it and we relate better to our children because of that. But, you know, people's necks are changing. I mean, their structure of their necks and their shoulders, because they're always looking down at these things. And what are they doing? I mean, I've been reading tons of stuff about Twitter. I'm not a Twitter person, but I mean, the people, they're absolutely booked. In fact, there's a very interesting positive story about Twitter in the Chronicle of Higher Education this week, where the president of the President Ono, O-N-O, Santa Ono is his name, he has like, I think, 30,000 followers on Twitter. And he says he uses it for all kinds of very good things, and it sounded like it in the article, but, you know, it takes time. And can you get everything said? Maybe some things need to be said in 144 characters, but we'll have to see how that works out. This is interesting about guns. A woman in a Tennessee, police in Tennessee said a woman, a 19-year-old woman, smuggled a gun into the jail after a cavity search revealed she had been hiding the weapon in her crotch. Yes, she's charged with possession of stolen property, illegal possession of a firearm, and introducing contraband into the jail. She had one of these little North American Arms 22 caliber mini revolvers. You ever seen one of those things? I mean, they're literally about maybe 3 inches long, if that long. And they fire like four, you know, 22 caliber long rifle shells, I think. Long rifle, short rifle. I've seen the things, but you can literally hide it in your hand. Nobody ever know you even got it. And, you know, when a 22 goes off, it hurts people. All right, we're about done with the stories. This one I like. Interesting story, and something ought to be done about that. The man's picture is big. A prison doctor's been fired in Kentucky, and two other staffers. They're in the midst of being dismissed after an inmate in the Kentucky State Pen. He starved himself to death. Can you believe that? Case had exposed lapses in medical treatment, that they looked at the guy, they didn't check him very often like they were supposed to do. And the guy was banging his head. He was under some type of medications, and they stopped that. Then he started banging his head on the cell door fairly regularly. And so they put him in isolation, and he stopped eating. And he lost 30 pounds, and his 6-foot frame, he died weighing just 138 pounds, according to documents. But they didn't check on him enough to see that the guy wasn't eating. I mean, you put him on intravenous feeding or something when something like that happens. But that's a tragedy. He was in there for a drug charge, of all things. And he had done 9 years, if I'm not mistaken. He was scheduled to get out pretty soon. What did it say it was? I can't find it. Yeah. Anyway, this doctor, by the way, that they're suing has been sued. It might not be too much. He's been sued in federal court 103 times since 1992 by inmates and their attorneys. Now, that's not an indicator of a lot of guilt, actually. I mean, inmates sue all the time. It's a way to do something. Well, anyway, that's the news stories for tonight. Some interesting things going on. There's some longer items that would take a long time to discuss, and we won't look at any of those tonight. But we do want to talk about this business of, hold on just a second, of traffic safety. And, you know, we kill over 34,000 people a year in traffic accidents. Many are injured. A lot of these people are motorcyclists and pedestrians that get killed. And tonight we're going to be listening to Jeff Kaufman, and he's a transportation operations coordinator at the Houston-Galveston Area Council. The presentation covered regional trends for crashes, fatalities, and injuries. And his topics are things like engineering, education, and enforcement. Those used to be called the 3 E's. Now they've added another one, emergency response. So now I guess it's 4 E's. But engineering, we can make roads safer by the way we build them, and traffic flow, etc. Education, enforcement, and emergency. So I think you'll enjoy listening to this gentleman. He's got a lot to say about something that's very important to us, and be careful out there on the highway and obey the law. And I'll tell you, the thing that I am so tired of now are people tailgating me and speeders. People pass me going 25 and 30 miles an hour over the speed limit. I had one woman this week pull back because a tractor trailer was coming after him when she was right beside me, and pulled back, and she was blowing past me at 20 miles an hour over the speed limit. And when tickets go up, accidents and injuries go down. It's been proved so many times we couldn't count the times. So let's listen to Jeff Kaufman talk about this. Give me a second to set it up.
Working with various traffic safety partners for over 10 years, and more so I've been working with crash data for, I think, since the moment I stepped foot in this place. And if that was an interesting experience, just because I stepped in and some strange guy I never met said, you want to work with safety data? And having just started and needing a job, I was like, okay. So I got head deep into it, and so this is part of my world. I had no idea, you know, first I thought I was just playing with numbers, and then I, you know, in looking at what it is that I've been working with in regards to these numbers, it's far greater than that. Traffic safety tends not to be the sexiest topic in the world because, of course, everyone here is, you know, at least we are one of the greatest drivers in this room. I mean, I don't think anyone here will admit to being a terrible driver. And so often we don't think about traffic safety. But why should we think about it? Well, in this region, the Houston, California area, we have over 100,000 serious incidents a year. This is where there is a fatality, a serious injury, or potentially a great deal of property damage to a vehicle, where at least it's over $1,000, which today actually isn't too much because, as I found out, that even the bumper cover that comes off my car because it got dented, that's a $600 fix, oddly enough. So, but it's over $100,000 in 100,000 incidents a year in this region. Almost 600 people die on our roads every year in the area. It's over 3,000 for the state of Texas every year. And over 16,000 serious injuries. And this is serious injuries where someone is taken out on an ambulance because they're incapacitated or there's something obviously wrong, like a broken arm or broken leg. Essentially, by the time you leave here, if starting when I just got started, tell you time we probably three people have gotten seriously injured on our roadways. Another big issue, you know, we talk about transportation. The biggest issue here is congestion. You got to cure congestion. Crashes is one of the biggest causes of congestion. You got two cars connecting in the middle of the road, it's backing up traffic. How do you cure congestion? Stop crashing in the middle of the road. It'll take care of at least 25% of your issues in regards to congestion. Also, we have some law enforcement here. It puts a strain on folks like law enforcement, the fire department, EMS, doctors, various folks who have to address an incident every time it occurs. That's your tax dollars at work. That's your tax dollars you're going to be paying more crashes go up. And also your insurance costs. More crashes you have in an area, the more your insurance costs. Go to an area that has fewer crashes, your insurance rates will be far less. Why else? Why is traffic safety important? It costs our region money. The National Safety Council has old methodologies for estimating the cost of unintentional injuries, including car crashes. And we're looking at things like the cost of productivity, the cost of insurance, hospital stays, follow-up, et cetera. These are the total costs for our region based on what occurred in 2013, you saw the breakdown. About $5.3 billion, with a B, dollars a year it costs our region. We often, every year, Texas A&M Transportation Institute comes out with a study that talks about the cost of congestion. We're very interested in the cost of congestion on our region. That figure is only $3.1 million. And you got to figure that some of that congestion cost is right there. So this is a serious issue that actually has economic impact on our region as a whole. This is one of my favorite graphs. Why we need to talk about traffic safety. How many of y'all have a gun in the home to protect yourself? It's all right. It's Texas. You're allowed. Odds are you're going to get killed on the highway before you get killed by someone in your home. And this is what shows it. It's something that we're, you know, we have a lot of focus on being safe in our own homes. We, you know, we're, you know, safety is about making sure that our family's not assaulted, our homes aren't burglarized, that we're not murdered or robbed. But truth be told, it's also what's going on the road. I got to tell you that law enforcement, this is a big deal for law enforcement too, because, and I have my law enforcement representative over here from the Sheriff's Department, I think you can tell me that in regards to where the money goes towards, in terms of what gets looked after, what's most important in regards to law enforcement and where we put our resources, you want your cop there to protect your home, to protect your family, to protect your businesses. But the same cop, this cop pulls you over for doing 15 over and on the freeway. This is the agent of the devil right here. Raise your hand, sir. He is one of Satan's minions. And it's unfortunate because while he might be causing you some aggravation and grief, he's saving me and my family from that individual plowing into me. But our resources aren't necessarily geared towards this. But it's still a very serious situation. This is one that's close to my heart. And it's up there with that red box, slightly ovalized, is that crashes will most likely be the reason why your kids die. And my kids fall into that range that I have to be most concerned about whether or not they get killed in the car crash. And that, you know, we talk about the things that, you know, I'm not so terribly concerned about some of these other things happening to my kids, but I buckle them in, and I want to make sure that they are safe. So what does this look like for our area? Car crashes in our area, it's been interesting. We actually were experiencing a downward trend for quite a while. And then all of a sudden, over the last 2 years, it's gone up. And not just gone up significantly. Since 2011, car crashes went up 25%. I'd love to be able to exactly tell you why. I can only narrow it down to three reasons at this point. One, we had a bit of an economic downslide, and people drove less due to it. We have the data to show that, you know, people were driving less, there were fewer vehicle miles traveled, less opportunity to get into a crash. Second, also in economic bad times, we tend to be a little more cautious. Perhaps we are being a little more safe. And things are getting better for a lot of us, so maybe we're kind of letting go of some of this. The third issue is that, frankly, there's been some developments in terms of crash reporting, that there are new systems out there that make it easier to report incidents. It used to be that officers had to fill out this ungodly report called the CR3. How many of you filled out? Too many. It is a pain. Now it's on their systems in their squad cars, and there are some systems that even download, once it's into the system at the agency, it downloads straight into TxDOT system, which is where I get all my data from. Is this better reporting? That might be it as well. We have to keep an eye on the trends because these are the data that we are working with. And I can't modify the data necessarily, but this may shape what our future looks like in terms of how we choose to respond to a lot of these issues. And this is going to be a big deal when we come to dealing with policy in our area, because as the federal government is looking at doing, we are potentially going to have to keep track of how crashes improve or how crash rates improve or decline and be willing to deal with this. In terms of regionally, how it looks in regards to how we're all effective, on average, about 585 people a year are killed in crashes in our region. And it fluctuates. This is actually a good trend to some degree because, oddly enough, fatalities are somewhat random events because there are a lot of these fatalities that potentially did not need to happen. 1 in 4 of these fatalities were people not wearing their seatbelts. They were wearing their seatbelts. They perhaps would not show up. That's something that's easily addressed. It could be a matter of how the car was hit. You know, if you get hit in the back, heck, a lot safer than if you're hit in the side. You know, 55 miles an hour impact in the rear is far safer than it's going to be on the side of your car. But it's pretty stable. Yes, sir?
Is there a reason why the counties of the state
a couple reasons. One, vehicles are getting safer. They are getting safer. So we are able to survive certain impacts. And second, there is a level of randomness to it. There could be sheer luck. Frankly, sheer luck. If you get the right set of circumstances where everyone gets hit right in your driver's side door at 60 miles per hour, I guarantee you this number will go up exponentially. There is an aspect. Crashes can be random events. Nobody gets up and plans a crash. They happen. There are circumstances that play into it. But this is a good sign, and I will give a lot of credit to this in regards to this, is that cars are a lot safer. The same thing goes with serious injuries. If you'll notice, the trends here, they fluctuate a little bit, but they're not going down terribly. They're not going up terribly. It's just that there is a series of events that occur, and depending on the situation, be it the nature of the crash, that, you know, there are some years more people get injured and some years people don't. This slide, though, is the most telling one. It's how many crashes are property damage only. And this is going up in regards to your question. And I think this is perhaps, I'd like to just show you a very quick video. This is one of my... For the 50th anniversary of the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety, they took a 2009 Malibu, which was standard midsize car for the day, and pit it up against a 1959 Chevy Bel Air, which was the standard midsize car of the day. And what they did was they basically did an offside head-on crash where both drivers would get impacted. This is inside the 59. The driver is essentially in the back seat. I was about to say, the real tragedy of this video is that they ruined a perfectly beautiful 1959 Bel Air.
You know how fast
they were going? At least this is a 35-mile-per-hour crash. Now, this is inside of the 2009. He hit the airbag, as it's designed to do. The front end was not in the best of shape, but this is how far things have come. We think about older cars as being heavier, you know, behemoths of steel, but the truth is it's not the weight of the car, it's the design of the car that has made them a lot safer. The invention of crumple zones, various improvements in bumper, oddly enough, you have to thank NASCAR for some of this. But this is a positive trend, that despite an increase in crashes, there are more and more that's only damage to the car, and that's a good thing. In regards to how we're dealing with this, though, because this is a huge problem, too many facets, and there's what in safety they have is called the 4 E's. It used to be 3 E's, and now there's a 4th E, which is emergency management. And the four E's are engineering, enforcement, education, and, as I mentioned, emergency management. Traditionally, when traffic safety comes into play, the thought is that there is an engineering issue at hand. I have my friends over here in the corner that remind me of this every day, almost, as they call me looking for information about various intersections. I'm assuming you get a phone call of some sort saying that, you know, I have the most deadliest intersection outside of my subdivision. Tell me how many crashes there are. That there is an engineering fix to this. And truth be told, there are some cases that engineering is appropriate. It's possible that there is a problem with road configuration. Perhaps traffic signals are slightly out of whack, that the yellows are too short. Perhaps there's inappropriate signage. Perhaps there's insufficient pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure available. You know, engineering plays a part in fixing some of this. And this is, it's critical, and, you know, and it's something that is highly focused on. But as I have my engineers in the room, I will ask them, you all, your PEs, I've worked with these gentlemen for a very long time. I know they are perfectly capable engineers. I would ask them to design my intersection any day of the week, year, or month. Can you design me a perfect intersection that will prevent two people from colliding? Get working on it. As I like to say, design me a perfect intersection, I'll find you two perfect idiots who will find a way to collide in it. That's the problem. Some of it, there's engineering, but there's a lot of human error involved. A lot of human error involved. In fact, if you look at the vast majority of crash data, there's something called a contributing factor. And it's a factor where that is about why this crash occurred. And you'll see a whole list of things, running a red light, speeding, drinking, using your cell phone. I mean, there's a whole list of them, and almost every single crash that I have has a contributing factor that suggests human error. You give me a traffic signal that has a 2-second yellow instead of a 3, that car that catches that 2-second yellow might have to hit its brakes, so it doesn't get in the intersection and cause a crash. You might have an engineering issue there. The person that slams into that individual wasn't paying attention to the person ahead. That's a behavioral issue. Now, granted, there's only so much that can be done by changing that to a 3-second yellow. But the person behind me isn't paying attention. That's where the problem lies. And a lot of the crashes, that's what's going on, is that it's someone behind who isn't necessarily on top of the situation if something sudden happens that cannot control for the situation. So we have other things that we need to look at for fixing it. There's enforcement. Enforcement is key. We need enforcement out there for, you know, we have speeders, we have people running red lights, we have drunk drivers. But in order to make that truly, truly effective, whatever our police force is now, multiply it by what, 2, 3, 4, in order to keep it all safe, is extremely costly. You know, I'm blessed. I got this, in fact, these last 2 weekends, I have a DWI task force that had 17 agencies out there looking for drunk drivers. That's great. They operate 8 weekends out of a 52-weekend year. So I got 44 weekends that I can't necessarily account for that, you know, there will be folks out there drinking, driving out, necessarily have the folks out there enforcing. And they're, you know, law enforcement, they're out there, they're doing a host of things. They might be looking for drunks. They're getting cats out of trees, too. They're stopping burglaries. They're preventing family members from getting assaulted. So, I mean, they have a lot on their plate already. But enforcement is going to be key making this happen, because one of the things in order to make this easier and make us safer is to make it more difficult to do. Education is a big part of it, too. If we start teaching folks on the early side, you know, it's taken a long time to get folks to realize that drinking and driving is a bad thing. Wearing seatbelts is a good thing. Why did it take so long? I have no idea. But educating folks is critical to it. I educate my kids right from the get-go. Lord knows, my neck bothers me whenever I back out of the driveway. So I don't put my belt on. I know I'm taping this. Okay, I'm guilty. I don't put my belt on until I'm back out of the driveway because, frankly, it kills my neck. And my daughter gives me grief about it every single time. She's 7. That's when you got to get them because it's not just I can put out programs. I have programs that I work with that works with high school students, try to get them educated about safe driving as teenagers. There are various programs out there that driving schools, but one of the biggest educators out there is us, as parents, and that we teach them right from the get-go, they emulate us. Emergency management, that's the fourth thing, that's the new one they threw in, because a lot of this is about usually the aftermath of an incident, and some of this is about when an incident occurs, it's critical to get that incident cleared as best as possible. Because the longer you have it out there, the more you back up traffic, and you have the potential of having a secondary crash, especially on the freeways. Because you got traffic slowing to a halt on the freeway, and you got someone coming over the hill and doesn't see the backup at 60 miles an hour, it's a recipe for disaster. I'd like to get into quickly, as best possible, some of the issues that we need to look at in regards to various aspects of traffic crashes in our region. Because, I mean, there are so many different issues that we have to look at, so many different issues. It's not just a matter of, you know, two cars connecting. There are various factors that get into it. And so I'd like to go over the various issues that we're experiencing, you know, in regards to traffic safety in our region. Alcohol-related crashes, perhaps one of the most noted issues in our area. Harris County, unfortunately, is number one in regards to DWI deaths in the country. About the same size as Chicago, and I think we're 4-1 in regards to DWI death. It's amazing that how far we even Los Angeles County, which has 3 times the amount of people as Harris County practically, we still top them in regards to DWI death. Thankfully, alcohol-related crashes seem to be going down. I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that there are a lot of agencies that are taking this very seriously. They're out there on the weekends. The district attorney has no refusal weekends where if you get caught for a DWI and you refuse to blow, they'll take you downtown and they'll draw your blood. They'll get a warrant and draw your blood. It's becoming much more put out there that drinking driving is not acceptable, and perhaps folks are starting to listen. Alcohol-related fatalities, you're looking at about 4 of every 10 crashes involve alcohol, whereas fatalities involve. If people just didn't drink and drive, these could possibly go away. I mean, it's rather insane. It's terribly unfortunate, but 4 of 10 involve alcohol. And the average offender has a blood alcohol limit over twice the legal limit. 0.08 is the legal limit, so to speak. And you have to figure that it's not one margarita, it's probably close to 3. It's 5 beers. And that's just the mean and the median, which just happen to be the same. All these bars that go beyond that, there are people who are doing 3 times, 4 times, in some cases even 5 times the legal limit, and somehow surviving that. I have no idea how. In regards to drunk driving issues, though, and there are a lot of them. One, there is essentially a DWI defense industry, I'd say, out there. How many of you have heard a commercial on the radio that says, basically, have you murdered your neighbor lately? Robbed a convenience store? Put someone's house on fire? Assaulted a family member? Maybe you're just being misunderstood. And really, you need us to help you out. You never hear that commercial on the radio, but Lord knows if you have a drink, there are a host of folks out there who are willing to help you get off from this. It is huge. It is absolutely huge. And, you know, because of that, because of all this, evidence becomes critical in regards to these cases. My friend here with the badge and the gun, it takes hours to process a DWI. Your standard car crash would take, what, maybe half an hour to process? Average DWI? 2 hours. He's got it good. Folks on my DWI task force, it's 3, 4, 5 hours, depending on how many folks are out there to draw blood or to process the paperwork. It's a real busy night. 4 or 5 hours, potentially, to process a DWI. But, yeah, 2 hours, is, you know, they have it. That means you have it down to a science. It's the amount of paperwork compared to any other crime is a little ludicrous, frankly. But this is what has to happen in order to ensure that this case is going to get prosecuted accordingly. One of the big issues that helps play into this, though, is something called the Uniform Accident Sickness Policy Provision Law. You've all heard of it, right? No? Okay, we call it UPPL. It's an odd little archaic law that was put into effect that basically said that if you are caught, if you come into the hospital and you have been in a car crash, and it's determined that you have alcohol in your system, an insurance company does not necessarily have to pay for your hospital bill. The people who actually put that law into effect, and this was years ago, maybe almost 50 years ago, think that this law is silly and should be repealed. Texas has not repealed this law. Now, why is this an issue here? Is because one of the things that could happen is that if as an officer, you have a DWI suspect and you want to take them into a blood draw, there's only probably, outside the county jail, there's only two places you can take them to get the draw, Bentob and LBJ. Two hospitals. Why? Because St. Luke's, Memorial Hermann, name some of the other private hospitals, there's concern there that they will not get reimbursed. So they will not necessarily participate in getting a blood draw. The other two are public hospitals. They have to take you anyway. This law needs to be repealed. This is causing some problems in terms of prosecuting cases. Something that I was talking about offside is that, frankly, we are a region that's heavily reliant on the car. I talk about other places, New York City, Chicago. They have far lower drunk driving rates, drunk driving deaths, because they're not necessarily reliant on the car. We are reliant on the car. If we want to get a drink, odds are we got to get in the car. The closest establishment to me that serves alcohol is, let me rephrase that. The closest establishment that I actually want to step foot in that serves alcohol is 2 miles away from me. So I can walk there, which would take probably about a good hour or so. Or I can drive there and get there in about. And if I have 2 margaritas and they are strong margaritas, then I got to drive home or take a cab. Well, if you've driven there, a lot of people will drive home. They just will. We rely on that car. This way this region is set up, the reliance is there. It almost, I would say, puts us in a position where we have to make this decision, and it's unfortunate because there are times that often we decide wrong. It's an inconvenience. We should be getting a cab. We should have someone come and pick us up. But too many people will say, well, I'm here. I have my car. I'm going to drive home. Again, we have some DWI task forces. No issues recent weekends out there. I think they are actually making a difference. I really do. I hope these will continue because the more that's out there, more folks out there, they know that we're watching you. I think people are going to be more careful about it. The HIP happening, next topic, the HIP happening issue of the day, distracted driving. Because this is the one where, you know, we all now have these handy little gadgets here. And it's the drunk driving, you know, where drunk driving was in the early 80s is what distracted driving is today. This is the traffic safety topic du jour. Crashes, oddly enough, according to this, are going down. And maybe slightly going up, and that might be in line with how crashes are going up in general. Yes. Well, I'm going to actually get into this data set in a minute because there's something a little odd about. It's not odd about this. It's actually a major issue in regards to this data set because all my data from one of the first slides. This comes from crash reports that are done from law enforcement officers who have to write up these reports. And there are some serious data issues that play into this, and I will get into that in a minute. But before I do, one thing I want to look at here is who by age causes distracted driving. A lot of the focus is about young folks, teenagers, because, you know, all teenagers do is text. That's all they do. Morning, noon, night, in the car, during breakfast, that's all they do. And folks' perception is, well, they are the problem. They are a problem. Well, if you look beyond this 16 to 20 age racket, there are a lot of other people who are causing the problem too, and probably at all of our age groups. So this isn't just a teenager problem. This is an all of us problem. So what are the distractions we're looking at? They're all over the place. The phone call, texting, eating, drinking, your passenger, in my case, my children, people trying to shave, put on makeup, reading books and newspapers, which is an odd one because there was a study done that said that texting is more dangerous than reading your newspaper in your car. I'm not quite
Well, I think Jeff does a nice job of making a presentation, and you can go to YouTube and get the rest of that if you would like. It's Jeff Kaufman. It's called Brown Bag Lunch Series, Traffic Safety in the Region. And not every area puts focus on this like Jeff and his community does, but I was surprised to find out that Houston-Galveston area, there's the highest place in the nation in terms of that county for fatalities. That's incredible, but it's good that they're doing something about it, and he sounds like he's a natural-born explainer and does a good job in making these presentations around the country. Well, folks, that's it for tonight. Hope you can join us next week, and we'll ask Vera Lynn to sign us off, as she usually does, singing We'll Meet Again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio?